Hey everyone, welcome to Round Ball Stew. I am Matt Straub. It is Monday, May 9th, and today we're going to be bringing you the latest takeaways from the NBA playoffs this past weekend and looking ahead into this week. We'll also be continuing our season in review, our fantasy season in review, that is, with a breakdown of the fifth round of fantasy leagues. Plus, as an added bonus, we have one of Dr. A's Tales from the Attic coming up later for those of you who are listening on the podcast. As I welcome in Mr. Attic himself, Steve Alexander. Steve, it's another Monday. It's sometime in May. The playoffs continue on. How was your weekend?
Matt, it was pretty good. Played a little golf on Saturday. That did not go.
Sure did.
That did not go very well. Sunday's Mother's Day, as you know, and
I've heard
we try to do something nice for my wife every year, and somehow it always gets screwed up. And this year was no exception. It's a long story, but just say I just need to give up in trying to find places for us to eat and places to take her on Mother's Day, because it never goes as planned.
Oh no. So let me guess.
I'm retiring.
You tried to go get brunch. You did not have a reservation. You show up and it was an hour and 15 minute wait and everyone was disgruntled, frustrated. Dude, why didn't we get a reservation? And that's what happened.
Such a great call, but it's quite the opposite. We had a reservation. My wife was like, I don't want to go. I don't like what's on their menu and it's going to cost a bazillion dollars. So I'm friends, of course, with the person that runs the thing. And I text her. I'm like, dude, she doesn't want to do it. Let's just cancel it. We'll do something else. It's like, oh no, I'm gonna leave your reservation open. You guys can just keep the table and grab a pizza or something. And it was a disaster. I was given bad advice.
Wait, grab a pizza from somewhere else and bring it to the restaurant?
Well, it's at the winery. They've got a little pizza kitchen down in the back.
Okay.
Like there's a spot out on the back for the pizza eaters. And then there's a spot inside the building for the actual people who pay for brunch, pay the big money.
Gotcha.
Well, I was at a big money table, but I didn't have my friend wasn't our server. And it was just not.
People were looking at you funny for eating pizza at the big money table.
They were going to if I walked up there with a pizza. Let's just put it that way.
Got it.
I think we all knew going into this that we should not even be going out there based on what we were looking to do.
Tough.
I just choked. I should have said no. I'm just not strong enough.
All right. Well, better next year. Good luck. Good luck to you.
Thank you. I'll need it.
We have some news. Before we get into the playoff takeaways, we have some regular season news. That is that Nikola Jokic, as you probably heard by now, if you're watching this podcast or listening to this podcast, has won his second straight MVP award, Steve. And you were telling me beforehand that at least one of your Sixers fan friends is not pleased about this.
You've heard me mention P. Apples in the past. He's a big Sixers guy. And he got on Facebook and said that Jokic getting the award over Joel Embiid was, quote, a disgrace.
Wow.
I said, strong. I mean, disgrace? Strong really? Words. I mean, the guy averaged a lot of points and a lot of rebounds and a lot of assists and doubled up Joel Embiid's assists, which is really what I think separates the two. Embiid won the scoring title, had more points, but I don't know. Like you said to me, Matt, this is not a playoff award. It's a regular season award. They voted on this a long time ago. You take Embiid off the Sixers, they're going to be terrible, but they probably win more games than Denver wins without Jokic.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, for me personally, not being a fan of either team, it's just a hard thing for me to, I probably would feel the same way if I was a Sixers fan, but it's just hard for me to get too fired up and upset about a guy winning the award when that guy averaged 27 points, 14 rebounds, and 8 assists rounding up. I mean, it's a spectacular season. They both had spectacular seasons, you know? Giannis had a great season as well. There are worthy candidates, and I understand why P. Apples is frustrated. I get it. Embiid played a career high 68 games too. It's like, if not now, then when is he going to get it? So I understand. I think you and I have to move ahead because we have other things to cover.
Like the Celtics taking a heartbreaking loss to the Bucks on Saturday, Matt?
Sure. Is that where you want to go? Is that where you want to go with this, Steve?
I don't know. This is your show. I'm just here.
I mean, what's funny is I was going to give you a chance to talk about the Mavs first things first, and you just want to talk about the Celtics.
Oh, so you want to jump straight into Mother's Day Sunday.
Yeah, let's talk about Sunday's games, and then let's talk about what's coming up on Monday. So the Mavs and the Suns, Steve, you probably know this, are while you were eating shortly after you finished your incredibly awkward brunch, the Mavs tied up this series on a day where Luka Doncic shot 9 for 25 from the floor, 1 for 10 on threes, but he was bailed out by playoff legend Dorian Finney-Smith, who had 24 points, 8 rebounds, and shot 8 of 12 on three-pointers, Steve.
That was something else that went wrong yesterday, as I had made the comment earlier in the day that I will be at Johnny B's watching Luka at 3:30, with or without all you people. But then by the time 3:30 rolled around, it was like, I'm not going to Johnny B's. We're gonna go hang out at my daughter's house and eat some food over there, do Mother's Day hang time over there. Now, thankfully, Matt, you know, these kids that don't have real TV, they stream everything. I was like, sure. Am I going to be able to watch Luka at my daughter's house? I was really concerned about it, but it actually happened. It happened. I was able to watch Luka and the Mavericks kind of dominate that whole game. Chris Paul fouls out very early in that game. Four fouls at halftime for the first time this season for Chris Paul. That was sort of the key. And then, like you said, Dorian Finney-Smith went crazy. It seemed like every time I looked up, a Maverick was hitting a wide open three-pointer in the first half. And then they showed Luka's like 1 of 10 from three. So everybody was hitting them except for Luka.
Yeah, the Mavs started out something like 12 of 18 on threes to begin that game. And the Chris Paul, a couple of those fouls seemed a little iffy to me on Chris Paul. I'm just going to say, in a playoffs where the refereeing just continues to be in the spotlight. But what are you going
to
do?
That's what I was going to say, Matt, to your comment. Like, every foul I see seems shaky. And then the no calls look like fouls. Like, I don't know, man. I really have very little faith in these referees right now. It's just been weak.
Yeah. Super frustrating to watch. Meanwhile, the Sixers and the Heat are now tied 2-2. Philly won 2 straight at home and got a huge game from playoff James Harden, Steve. 31 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, a playoff high. Only the second time with the Sixers he has topped 30 points. And that is a big deal for Philly if they are getting the real James Harden back.
Well, he hit those two huge threes late in that game to kind of put it away. He was howling at the moon. Everybody was going crazy. And both of these Sunday series, the road team was down 2-0 after the first two, and now they're all square. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens in game 5 for the Suns with Chris Paul coming back super angry about only being allowed to play half that game. And the Mavericks kind of riding high. I think I would probably be betting the Suns if I was going to bet game 5. And then same with the Heat have to be in shell shock now that Joel Embiid is back, and he looks he looks kind of unstoppable. And if playoff James is going to be here, then the Sixers could pull off a huge series win there.
Well, and Steve, that's why I've been saying it's such a disgrace that Embiid didn't win the MVP award. I mean, look at the impact this guy has had on this series alone.
Jimmy Butler, let's not forget he had 40 points in that game, had a masterful performance, but he didn't get a lot out of his guards. Like this whole Kyle Lowry thing. I don't think Kyle Lowry and I are ever going to be the same again.
Yeah, he reportedly re-injured that hamstring, by the way, and I think his status is now in question for Game 5 based on what I was seeing on NBC Sports Edge prior to us coming on the air here. And also, I saw something on, I think it was on StatMuse, the old StatMuse Twitter account, that Miami is some horrendous number shooting threes the last couple games, and Duncan Robinson has played, I think, 1 minute in this series. Duncan Robinson makes a lot of money to not be playing in this series. So
Duncan Robinson got paid last year, and now they won't even play him. Struess starts, and he was 2 of 5 for 6 points. And then Tyler Hero, if Tyler Hero's not going off, the Heat, I think Tyler Hero might be the key to that team. Like Butler and Adebayo did what they needed to do, but they needed that third guy to step up. And Hero's mm-hmm. usually that guy, and he wasn't there, so that hurt.
It's funny the ripple effect of Embiid being back. You know, it's like all of a sudden, Philly's third and fourth options are Tobias Harris and Tyrese Maxey. I mean, that's a dangerous team. It turns out this team looks better with Embiid there. Yeah, 14 for 65. Albert Mariquin, who's listening, and thank you, Albert. The Heat are 14 for 65 from three of the last two games. That's the stat that I was referencing but did not have written down. And I would have said 14 for 68 if I'd guessed. So,
well, Albert is the actual information. Albert's to pick up our slack.
Albert's on it. It's big time. That's clutch. Okay. Yeah, now let's turn to what's coming up on Monday night. We know it's the Warriors and Grizzlies. Warriors leading 2-1. Obviously, no Ja Morant there. All of the drama this weekend with the Morant knee injury, Steve. The Jordan Poole play that has been much discussed, where Poole grabbed at the knee, etc. He says he didn't mean to do it. NBA didn't discipline, you know, didn't assess anything. What are your thoughts on all this madness in this series?
I mean, if you look at the replay of Jordan Poole kind of swiping at Ja's knee on his way down, it looked like he barely even touched him. Like, my daughter was saying something like, it seems like these NBA players are always just a inch away from having their career ended. Yet, you know, us, when we were kids and we were going to Park and Rec and playing basketball, we could take just these crazy shots and pop right back up and run down the court. So I don't know. I don't think Jordan Poole was trying to hurt Ja Morant. If you're going to try to hurt somebody, I think you do something more than swipe at their knee on your way down. But the fact that was enough to do it is pretty scary, and it sucks for the Memphis Grizzlies, man. Like, that's tough.
Yeah, it's a brutal spot to be in. And by the way, did you just say that you are essentially tougher than most NBA players? Was that what I was to take away from?
No, my daughter was saying she is tougher than most NBA players.
Got it.
Like, if somebody did that to my knee when I was in sixth grade, I'm sure I would have popped right back up. But it's different when you're a pro athlete. I don't know what she was trying to say exactly, but
she's saying that pro athletes have weak knees. Is that what she's saying?
That essentially is what it comes down to. What did you think of that replay of that shot? Did it look like much to you?
It looks, I mean, once you start watching it more and more, you kind of find yourself thinking, well, how did he swipe and miss the ball by that much? But then again, I mean, we're seeing it in super slow motion and in real time. Like, you're swiping at the ball, you can easily miss the ball by a fair amount, you know, when you're trying to swipe at it. So it's just hard to imagine that the guy would go after his knee on purpose. But it's also understandable why Memphis is so frustrated. And when you slow down that play and look at it, it does look kind of weird. But I think I would err on the side of giving the benefit of the doubt to be like, that he wouldn't take a shot at the guy's knee like that. And he said he didn't, and the league didn't find anything, you know, wrong with that play in particular. We have more to come, more playoff talk, and we're going to review the fifth round of fantasy. First, we're going to take a quick break. Just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app powered by PointsBet, go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands by predicting what will happen in the NBA playoffs, Premier League, on the PGA Tour, and NASCAR circuit. We also have a very special edition of NBC Sports Edge's A Good Football Show. Following the NFL schedule release on Thursday night, join Sarah Perlman, Pat Daugherty, Drew Dinsick, and Pat Corain on Friday at noon Eastern as they dig into marquee matchups, analyze team win totals, and predict who we think will be crowned divisional champions in 2022. And by the way, that reminds me, this week our schedule, which I should have mentioned before, is Monday, Wednesday, Thursday because of that episode of Good Football Show. So we will see you Wednesday as usual and Thursday instead of Friday this week. And Steve is back after we had some internet glitching. I think we're looking good now. Why don't you talk to me and tell me how you're sounding?
It was a little laggy there for a second.
Little laggy. I think we're in a better place now, though. I'm feeling good about it.
But as I was going to say, I generally take Saturday evenings off. So I didn't really see the Ja Morant knee injury play until Sunday at my daughter's house. Her boyfriend was showing it to me, and I think I was looking at it on his phone. Mm-hmm. And I watched it like three times. So I haven't really done a deep dive. I just, at first glance, it just didn't look like much from what I saw, but I'm going to, when we're done here, I'm going to take a deep dive into that injury and
good.
Figure
and,
it out.
And please do send your findings to the league office just in case they're significant.
Absolutely.
Okay, Steve, you came in here apparently all fired up to talk about this Boston-Milwaukee series, which kind of surprised me. Nothing against that series. I mean, it's intriguing as well. But I thought you were going to be ready to talk about Dallas. Apparently, you wanted to talk about Boston.
Not really. I'm just the chronological order kind of guy. So I thought we were going to go through the early Saturday game, the late Saturday game,
yeah,
the early Sunday game, the late Sunday game, then get to where we are right now. But you don't work. You work in a different. Well, you're more like, I'm going to ignore Saturday and tie that into what's happening on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
Smart way to do it. I support it. I was on a different wavelength, a different tangent.
Yeah,
I don't know. I was on a different something.
Yeah,
trajectory. Matt, I think that's what
different
I was
telepathy. For. Yes, for sure.
But Boston, Milwaukee, Monday night at Milwaukee. Boston's in a 1-2 hole here. This is crucial. This is the series, as they say.
This is the big one, Steve.
This is the big one. If Milwaukee wins tonight, I think the series is over.
Yeah, that's fair.
If Boston wins tonight, then they go back to Boston, and the winner of that game may win the series. I don't know. It's a great series. It's a fun matchup, as everybody thought it would be. Celtics are all up in arms about this Marcus Smart rip through play.
Yeah.
Matt, what's your take on that one?
I felt like he was shooting the ball. I felt like it was pretty obvious he was going up to shoot.
And the Celtics are all like, look at the scoreboard. Look at the situation.
He had to shoot there. That's the point.
In what world would he not be shooting right there?
Right, right. I think the Celtics have a real gripe there. And as someone who watches Trae Young all season long not get some of those calls where there are plays, and not to make this too much about Trae Young, but there are plays where Trae Young goes ahead and shoots it anyways, and he doesn't get the call. And it's a horrendous miss. So I don't know why the league doesn't give him the benefit of the doubt, because he is shooting it on those plays. And I believe it was the same thing with Marcus Smart there. Like you said, the clock, the game situation, he was shooting that ball. A pass there would have, what was it, 4-something seconds left, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he borderline had to shoot that. It was an upward shooting motion. I mean, I just don't understand. I don't understand it.
I don't understand it either. And to your point with Trey, I mean, Luka has had so much trouble getting and one calls, you know, his whole career. Like for some reason, these referees, especially with Luka and Trey, I feel like, and then it filters down to a guy like Marcus Smart in the playoffs. They're just so sensitive now about guys trying to get one over on them and fake their way into an and one or a shooting foul. And, you know, it's either a shooting foul or it's not. We shouldn't be as worried about whether we're getting juked or not.
Yeah. I mean, luckily the games are still so good, but man, the refereeing is distracting and it's frustrating and all that. So,
I was a Celtics fan, I'd be a lot more upset about that play than I would be being a Sixers fan and having Jokic win the MVP award.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay, let's do our fifth round of fantasy leagues from this past season. The last 4 weeks, we've done the first round, second round, third round, and fourth round.
What? Did we not need to mention the greatness of Jordan Poole?
Would you like to have a moment here?
He's amazing. He probably should have won the Most Improved Player award. Him or Desmond Bane. I know it's not a playoff award, but man, he's been so good. I did not think that Jordan Poole would be making all the other great players on Golden State afterthoughts at this point, but he's so good.
27 points in that 30-point win over the weekend. Okay, now we're ready. You ready to press ahead?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
So we've done the first round, second round, third round, fourth round the last 4 weeks. Now to the fifth. And again, this is per game production in 9 category leagues. Last week, I had a little bit of a goof where I accidentally included the playoff numbers in the fantasy rankings, because you can do that on basketballmonster.com. This week, we're not. This is just regular season production. And Steve, one theme about this round is, it's interesting. This is a round with a lot of good players, but it's not necessarily a round that had a ton of fantasy upside, which I guess kind of makes sense since we're in the fifth round now. But let's just go through these guys. Number 49 on a per-game basis was John Collins, who averaged around, just going to round up or down here, 16 points, 8 rebounds, a block, 1.2 threes, a couple assists, you know, typical good percentages and low turnovers for Collins. I mean, my feeling about Collins is, you know, there is a 20 and 10 guy in there, Steve, but I think with the current build of this Hawks roster, 16 and 8 is probably what you're going to get. You know, Collins is also a guy who in theory could get traded. I don't want to think about that right now because it'd be too upsetting to me personally. But in a different situation, I think he can be a 20 and 10 guy. On the Hawks, as they're constructed, I think he's a 16 and 8 guy. And this is really right spot on where he should probably be drafted.
Well, in the 54 games hurt.
Yeah.
That was not a pleasant experience.
Fell apart at the end.
And it's, I don't know. Expectations for this guy 3 years ago were through the roof. I mean, you took him in the first or second round in a draft. We were hyping him as someone that we should be taking that high. Has never lived up to the hype, honestly. Had that whole weird contract situation with Atlanta, you know, over the last couple of years. And is he going to be there? Is he not? What happens to John Collins on another team? I'm probably just staying away from John Collins in drafts this upcoming year.
Okay, I'm just going to tell you, as far as your never lived up to the hype comment, in the 2019-2020 season, he averaged, well, granted, that was, I think, the season where he served a suspension, but when he played 41 games, 21.6 points, 10.1 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 1.6 blocks. That guy is still in there somewhere. I just think some combo of the
Hawks. How many games?
41.
How many games?
41. Should have won the MVP award that year. Got robbed. Okay, let's move to number 50. We talked about this guy last week because of my snafu. Damian Lillard was a number 50 player in 9 category leagues on a per-game basis in his 29 games dealing with that abdominal injury. I don't think we need to rehash too much of what we said last week. I think you were saying if we're getting a full bill of health on Lillard, he's back to being like a borderline first-round guy for you.
I doubt I'll take him in for the first, but
yeah.
I think anytime between 10 and 20
mm-hmm.
is Dame time.
Yeah.
Baby.
It's a borderline cheat code potentially in fantasy next year. If he can go back to top 10 and you can get him in the second round because of all the injuries this year, that is a big bet that could pay off, I think, for fantasy managers.
And the fact that injury had been lingering there for like 2 years or mm-hmm. maybe even longer than that. And they finally took care of it, hopefully got it fixed. If he's good to go, if he's 100% coming into the season, he's going to be a steal no matter where he goes.
Robert Covington, different story here, was number 51 on a per game basis because of what Robert Covington does. You know, 1.5 steals, 1.3 blocks, 1.8 threes, while only averaging 8.5 points per game in his 71 games. He has a new 2-year deal with the Clippers, I believe. But Steve, it's hard for me to make Rocco like the fifth guy for me in a draft. I mean, I think he can put up this kind of value because of those steals, blocks, and threes, but you have to try to take him later. You can't draft him based on his production.
You need Rocco to score some points for you, and Rocco, especially in his current situation, just does not score points.
Yeah.
And when he does, it's an aberration and everybody's like, whoa, where did that come from? That was weird. But you know, a few years ago, you know, when he was with the Sixers,
mm-hmm.
and then later on when he was with the Rockets, mm-hmm. and early Portland, there was a time when he could score 13, 14 points a game, mm-hmm. and throw in all those other numbers and not shoot it so horrifically from the floor. But I feel like those days are past. I think Rocco, for me, if he's sitting there in like the 8th or 9th round, I'll take him as like a glue guy to mm-hmm. bolster my blocks and my steals and threes. But I don't know. It seems like he almost does as much harm as he does good.
I mean, no, I would want to have him on a fantasy roster, but I'm with you on the, you know, see if he'd fall that far. 8.5 points the last 2 seasons is what he's averaged. So it seems like for the foreseeable future, until proven otherwise, the days of, you know, 12, 13 points per game Rocco might be gone. OG Anunoby, 52 in 9 category leagues, finished around 17 points per game, 5.5 boards, 2.5 assists, 1.5 steals, 2.5 threes. Of course, he missed a bunch of games, Steve. What was it? 34? Did he miss 34 games this year? I think he did. So that's kind of crushing. This is a guy I'm probably fairly comfortable with in this range. I mean, I guess I would have liked to see a little more ceiling from him, but he's still pretty good.
I don't understand how he missed that many games. Doesn't feel like he missed that many. And then last season, the season before this one, he only played in 43 games.
Yeah.
So that's two seasons in a row where he's only played a half season.
That's, yeah, troubling.
That's highly concerning. But the other thing is, this dude has just been on a upward trajectory. His scoring has increased every single year.
Mm-hmm.
The steals are at 1.5 for basically 3 years in a row, which is pretty awesome. He gets enough blocks that it's not a detriment there. I don't know. I really, every time I see this dude play, I'm like, I slept on him again. Because he's better than I think he's better in reality than he is in my mind. But then you look at those games missed, man. It's scary.
I'm trying to get on the right telepathy there for that comment you just made. He's better in reality than he is in my mind. I need a minute to think about that. But I like him.
In my mind, he's just an average player. But
oh, okay.
He's pretty good.
I'd be pretty happy. Any fantasy league where I come away with him around this range, I'm not going to be upset. And last year was a bad shot blocking year for him at 0.5. He was 0.7 the 2 years prior. So plenty to like about this guy. He'll play next season at 25 years old, by the way. So still some upside. As you said, and as we've talked about, every year he's gotten better in scoring. 5.9 to 7.0 to 10.6 to 15.9 to 17.1. Are we reaching a plateau there soon? Maybe, but that plateau might be 18, 19 points per game.
And he's also due for a healthy season, which would be a game changer all the way around.
I'm all in. Ananobi in the first round. Okay, we've agreed. Mo Bamba is another guy. I think I'm going to have a hard time taking him quite this early after he averaged 10.6 points, 8.1 rebounds, 0.5 steals, 1.7 blocks, and 1.5 threes. There's a lot to like, but we also got him later than this in fantasy drafts. He's also a restricted free agent, so that's the big variable. It's hard to say where we should take him in fantasy when we don't know where he's playing. But I'm going to tentatively say if Bamba's there in the middle rounds for me, I will gladly take him in the right situation.
And I wonder what his stats would look like if you took out his like his five best games of the season.
Yeah.
I bet you his stats across the line would fall substantially, because that's the thing I remember about Mo Bamba last year is he would just have these monster nights.
Yeah.
Where he would just do crazy things from three and blocks and points. But generally, he's someone who doesn't really catch your eye the morning after in a box score. So I don't know. I need to see where he ends up.
Inconsistent, but he's young. I mean, I think with all that said, it's pretty encouraging that he put up these numbers, you know, is another way to look at it.
Yeah.
Despite that inconsistency.
That's true, but I'm probably looking somewhere else for my fifth round pick.
Okay. I mean, he's also, I'm going to double check. This guy is pretty young still, Steve. He's 23.
He should be.
He turns 24 in a few days, so we can all celebrate
that. As Jared was talking about the other day, Jonathan Isaac, also known as Jonathan Isaac.
Right, right.
What if he comes back and actually plays basketball? For those of you who don't know who that is.
Right.
He used to play. Supposed to be a really good player for the Magic.
All right.
We have not really seen him play forever, so who knows.
Number 54, CJ McCollum, who I think based on his track record and what he did with New Orleans, which was 24.3 points, 4.5 rebounds, 5.8 assists, 1.3 steals, 2.7 threes. He's probably going earlier than this in fantasy leagues, Steve. Zion or no Zion, I would say. That's my hunch. I don't think you're going to be sitting there in the fifth round of your draft and CJ McCollum just sitting there for you to take him.
I think if CJ is sitting there in round five, it's automatic. You're excited to see him there and you take him. In reality, he's probably going to go in the fourth round in most drafts is what I would what I would think. Is Zion going to come back and eat into some of his production next year? I don't know. He's also going to space the floor if it happens.
I mean, let's say Zion eats into some of his production a little bit. I mean, even if I take CJ McCollum from, you know, 24 points and 6 assists to, I don't know, 21 and 5, you know, 21, 4 and 5. I'm I'm still pretty happy with that guy, you know? And there's a lot to like here in New Orleans.
What a weird season in New Orleans for CJ McCollum, though. 49% field goal shooting, career high, right? Free throw shooting was 67%, a career low.
Yeah.
So what happened there, Matt? Can you explain that to me?
I don't know. I have not thought about his free throw shooting. I mean, I know that with other players, we've seen some wild fluctuations year to year with that stuff. I give you Russell Westbrook as one example of that. I would tend to think it's nothing to really sweat too much.
Dude, in 2016-17, CJ in 80 games shot 91% from the line.
That's crazy.
Last season, in 36 games in Portland, he was at 71, and in 26 games in New Orleans, he was at 67. That's pretty wild.
That's real weird. You know, that's weird. I mean, and then he has had, in the 2019-20 season, he shot 75.7%. So that was kind of a down year for him for an 81% career free throw shooter. He's also a pretty low volume free throw shooter. Those 3.9 attempts he got with New Orleans would have been a career high over the course of a full season. So either way, he's not a guy who's really crushing your free throw percentage, even if for some reason he shot it lower than we expect. Okay. So I'm glad you flagged that because it's interesting, but I'm not going to worry about it. Mikal Bridges was number 55 in 9 category leagues. We've talked about Bridges a lot. I feel like, you know, he was around 14 points, 4 rebounds, a couple assists, 1.2 steals, 1.4 threes, only 0.4 blocks, which I find a little disappointing, but good percentages, never turns it over. And in the playoffs, Steve, he's been better, a little bit better across the board. We're talking about 14.6 points, 4.7 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 1.2 blocks, 1.0 threes. I mean, that's what I always kind of expect from Bridges. You know, the 0.4 blocks this year is a big letdown for me. And if you're going to tell me he's going to be better in blocks next year, then he's much higher on my draft board for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, it was weird because that's a career low in blocks for him. He was at 0.9 the previous season.
Yeah.
The thing about Bridges, though, man, he doesn't miss games, right? Hardly ever misses a game.
82 this year.
Field goal percentage, rock solid.
Great.
Free throw percentage, 84% every single time, right down the line.
Yep.
Great there. Gets you some rebounds. Assists are lacking, but he's not a point guard, so that's okay. Steals are there. They're always there. There's no turnovers from this guy.
He's never turned
it over. In nine cat league, he's more valuable than he is in eight cats. And then, like you said, the block potential for one block a game is there.
Yeah.
It just went away this year. I don't know why, but I mean, to me, that the guy is just rock steady, great glue guy for any fantasy team. I think he's safe anywhere from 4 to 6 rounds.
I agree with everything you just said. I think my only concern is in the fifth round, I'd still like to be swinging for the fences and not taking glue guys. That's my only concern. But if you've had a first few rounds where you've taken some big swings and then you just like, you know what, let me get some stability here, then I think Bridges is your guy.
Or if you've built a stack that you don't have guys who turn the ball over, you don't have guys who miss free throws,
right?
Maybe you keep it going and add him.
Yeah,
you know, it depends on how you're building your team. But
safety is supposed to be the blueprint for Malcolm Brogdon, but Steve, for one big reason, it has not been in recent years. Now, look, this is a guy who, on a per game basis, the numbers continue to look quite good. 19 points per game this year, around 5 rebounds, almost 6 assists, a steal, 1.6 threes, good percentages, low turnovers for a lead guard. But the issue, as people probably know, is he played 75 games as a rookie. And since then, here are his games played year by year: 48, 64, 54, 56, 36 this year. I mean, he's a good player. He just can't stay healthy, Steve. And we have enough of a sample size here to where this is a real thing. And he's 29 years old.
Matt, as you would say, the Pacers got a guy last year I like to call Tyrese Halliburton.
Yes.
Indy fans are over Malcolm Brogdon. Get him out of here. Ship him. We're done. Let Tyrese have this thing and roll. Brogdon is a good player, man. When he plays, he's a really good player.
He is.
But he doesn't, you can't trust him. He doesn't play.
Yeah.
always hurt. Numbers aren't mind-blowing enough that you must have him on your team. Like you can afford to let somebody else draft Malcolm Brogdon, and that's what I plan on doing across the board.
We're in agreement there. Number 57 on a per-game basis is going to be a different story, and that's Tyrese Maxey, who had a good regular season. What was he? Around 17.5 points, you know, 4 assists. You know the story. I want to tell you about his playoff numbers, which are 22 points per game, 3.6 boards, 4.2 dimes, 0.8 steals, 2.4 threes. Steve, if there's one thing I can say that I'm concerned about with Maxey, it is those defensive stats. During the regular season, just 1.1 combined steals and blocks. During the playoffs, it's just 0.9 combined steals and blocks. And the only reason I say that is because I think based on Maxey's breakout, he's gonna be flying up draft boards. I mean, I don't think he's there for you in the fifth round, is he?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, I wonder where I drafted him this season, because I took him everywhere.
Yeah.
Because I knew my inside sources told me that Ben Simmons was never going to play basketball again. So I knew that I needed to have Maxey on my team.
Yeah, you had Maxey. You were on the Maxey train early.
And I'm going to be on the Maxey train again next season. Steals and blocks be darned. I don't know what to say. I mean, you talk about a breakout season. The other thing about these steals and blocks is the dude is so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's maybe the quickest guy in the NBA. Like you see him get a hold of a ball and take off going the other way.
He's fast.
Moving so much faster than everybody else. There's no reason he can't average 1.5 steals a game. Maybe it'll never happen, but I don't know why it wouldn't. I'm all in. I'll take Max in the fourth or fifth round next year.
We can, well, if he's, again, maybe he won't be there in the fifth round based on what he's done in the playoffs. Just a few guys left here. This is 58, and I don't think we have to spend a lot of time on these guys. In fact, I think we can just kind of quickly mention all three of them. Bobby Portis, number 58, kind of had the perfect storm this year with Brooke Lopez missing almost all of the regular season. He's also, we talked about him in our free agency episode last week. He has a player option for, I think, $4.5 million. So it'll be worth noting what happens with that. You could easily see him declining that, re-signing with Milwaukee. Either way, Brooke Lopez, Bobby Portis, maybe more of a platoon than it was this year. And Portis, therefore, maybe has a hard time duplicating his really good season this year. Tobias Harris, Steve, I'm going to tell you, is like the quintessential guy for this fifth round because kind of like Bridges, he's more floor than ceiling, but in the right team build, he's a really good pick. And Klay Thompson, in his 32 games, around 20 points, 3.5 threes, not a lot else. So any overwhelming thoughts on either of those final three guys?
Did you see that Ty Maxey half-court alley-oop pass to Tobias Harris?
I did.
On Sunday to basically seal that game. That was pretty fun basketball to watch. Tobias Harris is sort of like a Mikal Bridges. Like he just seems safe, does what he needs to do, puts up solid numbers. Yeah, I think any of those guys. Is Klay going to be there in the fifth round? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I think they're all – I think Portis and Klay and Tobias Harris are all solid fifth-round picks.
Yeah, I mean, Portis is the guy. I'm waiting to see how this offseason unfolds, I think, before I commit there. But otherwise, agreed with you. Any final thoughts for you, Steve, before we go to this Tales from the Attic installment?
No, I think we're good. I think we're good. Are we going to do round six next week, or are we moving on to a different format? This seems to be working. I kind of like...
Yeah, one more round. We keep extending the deal.
It just gives us a chance to talk about guys we wouldn't normally talk about.
Yeah, I think we're going round six next week. We're committing to it. And meanwhile, if you are listening on the podcast, it is time for that latest installment of Dr. A's Tales from the Attic, strange but true tales from the life of Steve Alexander, as told from his attic. Stay with us for that on the podcast. That's coming your way right now. Welcome to the latest installment of Dr. A's Tales from the Attic. I'm Matt Straup with Steve Alexander. Steve, we normally do these, and it's a story about you having an encounter with a basketball player, former NBA players, Rick Mahorn, Herb Williams, etc. But today, it's a change of pace, a different situation here. This is your encounter, somewhat basketball-related encounter, with a rock band. So set the stage for us. Tell us about Guster.
Well, Guster is always in the headlines because sometimes friend of the show, Brian Rosenworcel, comes on our podcast. And, of course, that generates... just millions and millions of social media hits and just countless. huge response. But also, every year when March Madness rolls around, a CBS college basketball analyst, Matt Norlander, in order to separate his computer from all the other people in the media's computer when they have to leave him in a room or something, his almost got stolen one time. So to differentiate it, he put a Guster is for lovers sticker on his computer. And it's this huge, like, car bumper sticker.
Yeah.
And it shows up in the Final Four every year, but it's usually kind of obscure. Or maybe if you only know who the band is, you would notice it. But this past year, for Mike Krzyzewski's final go, Norlander's seat was directly behind Krzyzewski's head, and Guster for Lovers sticker was all over everywhere. There were all the sports talk shows were doing stuff about it, and it really Guster was trending on Twitter.
Trending, Matt. Yeah, and so it turns out you actually have quite a long history with this band. So set the stage for us. Tell us your origin story with Guster.
Well, Matt, first of all, my wife and I went to see Guster play. We didn't really know anything about him. I'd heard him on the radio or heard him somewhere. Went and saw him play, and I actually took notes. This was July 20th of the year 2000 at the Vogue in Indianapolis. I wrote, "The drummer went crazy with taped fingers and hitting cymbals. The band was funny. Great show." So
I'm assuming that's on a crinkled, weathered treasure map-like piece of paper, I imagine.
It's actually on my computer.
Oh, wow. That's very unanalog of you, Steve.
Sorry, it's a word. It's an actual Word document that I've had going since the beginning, I guess. A lot of it was transferred over. Anyway, so Matt, that show obviously had an impact on me. They became one of my sure. I really like that band. And they're my wife's favorite band. Like that Lost and Gone Forever record that concert tour was for, that's her favorite record of all time. So one day in 2010, I open up my email. And back in the 2010s, I would always write about music when I wrote my daily doses and stuff. And I titled a daily dose, West of the Fields. I believe it had something to do with Delonte West at that time.
Okay. I was going to say Landry Fields, but fair enough, Delonte West.
I don't think Landry was playing back then, but maybe he was.
We'll get the research team on it. I'm going to say he was.
I get this email, and it says, "Impossibly cool. My favorite song off of Murmur is West of the Fields. That reference has to fly over most of your readers' heads." And then he knew that's right around the time my Stephen Malkmus and these interviews I was doing with people had come out. And he said, "I met Malkmus at a party in Nashville. A few years ago, we talked about boring stuff like analog versus digital, and he was wearing a Stephen Malkmus t-shirt, which I thought was hilarious. And then he said, if I'd known then, I could talk to him about Kendrick Perkins, Tyrus Thomas, and Russell Westbrook. The conversation might have gone on for hours. Keep up the good work, Brian." All right, so I'm like, well, that's a cool email. This guy is talking to me about music instead of exclusively basketball, and not who do I play this week, who do I cut? So I hit reply, and the name Brian Rosenworcel pops up. And I was like, yeah, I know that name from somewhere, but I can't quite place it. So, of course, Matt, what do you do when that happens? You go to Google.
You ask Jeeves. Oh, okay. Google.
You ask Jeeves.
Yeah.
You go to the phone book.
Yeah.
And you get your magic eight ball out. Anyway. I looked at Google.
Is this emailer a musician? Shake the eight ball. Outcome. Okay, sorry, carry on.
So I go on Google, and sure enough, Brian Rosenworcel is the drummer for the rock band Guster, who we'd seen 10 years earlier. This was in January 2010 that I got this email. So, of course, I fire right back. I'm like, I could read it, but I'm not going to pull it up. I'm like, Brian, are you the drummer for the band Guster? And he replies back. Like, I don't even think I said thanks for the email. I don't even think I acknowledged anything. I'm like, are you Guster's drummer? And he replied back. He was something like, yes, I was scared to tell you because these cool indie bands you like, I'm sure you hate my band. And I was like, no, I love your band. And my wife, you're actually my wife's favorite band. And so we went back and forth for a little bit. And at the end of our exchange, he's like, well, we're in Nashville recording our new album. you guys are welcome to come hang out if you want to.
I'm picturing you slamming the laptop closed at this point, running through the house. We got yelling to your wife, like, pack the bags. We're going to Nashville. We got to go. Is that fire about accurate?
Fire up the Cadillac. We're going
fire
to Nashville.
Fire up the wagon queen family truckster, hon. We're going to Nashville.
You go get Skylar out of school. I'll go get Chandler. All hands on deck.
We got to act now. Let's move, people. This is big one.
I'm at the front door with a bullhorn. This is the big one. Oh, man. This is the one we've been waiting for. Don't blow this for your father.
I need this more than you know. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So, yeah, you're probably not that far off of that.
Yeah,
I think if I look back on it, I get off the email because I think this went back and forth for like a long email chain for like an hour that morning. And the fact he just kept replying to me was funny. And I'm sure he's like, is this guy ever going to stop? But then again, unlike my shoe stories, he contacted me. I was not like stalking some poor NBA player. So
true.
It was a nice change of pace for me. So right. I get off.
So you run in the car, you load up the car and you hit the road.
I'm sure I get on the phone. I'm like, guess what? Because Casey, she has a real job and has to go to work every day in an office. I call her. I'm like, guess what? She's like, what? I'm like, Brian from Guster just invited us to Nashville. They're recording their record. She's like, oh, my God, that's awesome. Let's go. Yeah, we throw everybody in the throw everybody in the car that weekend, head to Nashville. I don't remember if there were cell phones involved back then or what was going on, but we met Brian, didn't meet the whole band, just Brian at a sports bar type restaurant in Nashville and hung out. And he started telling us about his kids and he met my kids and we had dinner and we were just talking about, he was talking a lot about basketball. I was asking a lot about music, which I have come to find that's what these musicians, I'm friends with a lot of them now. And they want to talk to me about basketball and I want to talk to them about music.
Sure. What else stood out from that dinner conversation that you guys had?
Well, the thing that sticks out the most in my mind is, you remember the notes I wrote from that concert is like he's hitting these real drums and these cymbals with his hands as hard as he can and so fast, and he's not playing traditional bongos. So I was like, dude, what does that do to your hands? He's like, you don't want to know, man. He's like, I've got nerve damage. I have to super glue my split skin together after shows. And I was like, you super glue your fingers together? Like, what? And I know that when I saw him 10 years before that, his hands were all taped and there was talc powder and stuff involved and all kinds of stuff. But yeah, I mean, the guy has literally beat the crap out of his hands for most of his life.
Yeah, there's got to be a better way than super glue, but I mean, it's incredible. Like Brian, I think he calls himself a percussionist or a bongo player, but drummer's not the right word, right? I mean, even though that's kind of what he's called, he is a percussionist. This man is, as you said, just bashing the hell out of his hands.
Well, Matt, you were not on that podcast the last time you were gone, so he was the guest host. I think he filled in for you.
Correct.
With me. And he told a story about how, well, he goes by Thunder God, and he gave himself that nickname, and he stole it. He stole it literally from Def Leppard. They're one-armed drummer. He stole it from them. So, but yeah, he goes by percussionist or Thunder God. But and I think I'm not calling Brian old by any stretch, but the older he gets, the more he's playing with like traditional drumsticks and taking some of the anger off of his digits.
That's fair. He's got to be able to type in the future when he joins our staff as a fantasy basketball analyst. You know, he's got to preserve those hands.
He likes to refer to himself as a fantasy analyst. Occasionally and I wish I had the text message he sent. He said something about, tell Matt I'm not going to be his intern forever or something like that.
Okay, hope you enjoyed that. If you were listening on the podcast, you can also find the video version on NBC Sports Edge. That is going to do it for us on this episode. Don't forget to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen. Take a minute to rate and review us as well. As I said before, our schedule is just a tiny bit different this week. We're back on Wednesday, and then we're here on Thursday instead of Friday this week. So look out for us Thursday at noon. I want to say thanks to everyone for listening and watching live with us. And thank you to you, Steve. I shall talk to you soon.
Goodbye.